20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL, and you can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you joining me today on this wonderful Saturday. Simple, fun, easygoing episode today. We're going to be going over some Packers that I thought were misutilized in 2025 and review how they can be utilized better in 2026. A couple of these we've gone over in different episodes in a roundabout way, but we're going to be grouping them together today and reviewing each one of these to see exactly where these players can be utilized better, so hopefully they can perform better this upcoming season. Before we get there, a couple things really quick. Just make sure to hit that subscribe button. That helps the channel a ton. It takes 2 seconds just to hit subscribe, so make sure you do that right now. Go do it. Super simple. Appreciate it a ton. Also, check out packadaypodcast.com. Bunch of new merchandise out there, sweatshirts, shirts, t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, you name it. We've got it out there. So check that out again, packadaypodcast.com. One piece of news that I've wanted to discuss over the last couple of days, and quite frankly, just kind of forgot about it. The Bears potentially moving to Indiana. This was something that when I first heard about it way back in the day, A, it didn't really register because I'm like, okay, yeah, right. But B, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine Indiana, the Indiana Bears? Like Chicago would lose the Bears to Indiana. And it seems like this huge ordeal, right? It really doesn't seem like it is. First of all, still a belief in me that at some point in time, they figure this thing out in Arlington Heights and they end up there. But it is actually interesting that where they're looking at in Indiana is actually closer to Chicago than Arlington Heights. And my assumption is this would still be called the Chicago Bears, just like it's the New York Giants and the New York Jets, despite them playing in New Jersey. Doesn't seem like it's going to affect anything in any real way. It's right next to Chicago, even though it's in Indiana. So when you first looked at it, when I first heard it, I'm like, oh my God, how embarrassing, whatever. Looking at it a little bit closer, again, A, I'm not sure it still comes to fruition, and B, it's really not that big of a deal. Maybe a little bit embarrassing, you know, for Illinois, and certainly probably some egg on the face of the state of Illinois. Maybe not the greatest look. I would put it this way. If the Packers decided to move to Upper Michigan, right? It's probably similar, but imagine Upper Michigan was just a little bit closer to Green Bay. If they moved to Upper Michigan and now all of a sudden they're in Michigan and it's still really close to Green Bay, it's closer to Green Bay than it is Detroit or anything like that, I would still feel like really Packers, you're going to abandon Wisconsin to go to Upper Michigan, even though, and you're still going to be called the Green Bay Packers. Great. It's not that far away. Great. But it would still feel a little bit like, I don't know, kind of shady, whatever. But at the end of the day, would it really be that big of a deal? Probably not. And this kind of feels the same way, where at the onset, it looks really gross and it sounds awful. But outside of Illinois and maybe the Bears having a little egg on their face, it would probably be something that would, you know, kind of go away relatively quick, and it wouldn't feel like anything was different or abnormal because they're still going to be the Chicago Bears, just a new stadium. And like I said, it's actually closer to Chicago than what Arlington Heights is. And if it's in Arlington Heights, you don't even think twice of it. So it's an interesting dynamic. I'm interested to see what comes of it. It would certainly be interesting if, you know, all of a sudden they did have to be called the Indiana Bears or something, but I don't think that that's going to be in play. Like I said, some interesting dynamics with it, but at the end of the day, I don't think it happens. And even if it does, I really don't think it ends up being actually that big of a deal. That brings us right away to our main topic today, and that is Packers who must be utilized better in 2026 than they were in 2025. I think this entire conversation is a great way to bring up Matthew Golden. And the interesting thing about Golden, which I have talked about on a couple different occasions, is that he did play 488 snaps a season ago, which was the second most of any wide receiver, primarily due to injuries to Christian Watson and Jaden Reed. But he did play more snaps than any other wide receiver not named Romeo Doubs. In fact, he probably will have played more wide receiver snaps than anybody that's actually going to be on the team in 2026, which is an interesting way of looking at it. However, it didn't feel like it was always meaningful snaps. And I didn't even do this ahead of time, but let me see if I can do this really quick. 488 divided by, what was it? Probably 18. So yeah, 18 games. He maybe missed a couple in there, but that's still only about 27 snaps per game. you know, maybe 27 to 30, somewhere in there if he did miss a game. But either way, even when they did utilize him, it didn't feel like they really utilized him, if that makes any sense. Yes, he was in there from time to time, but it didn't feel like he was a primary target. It didn't feel like they had a great plan for him. It didn't feel like they had the right utilization of him for how he could actually win, even though I feel like he can win in a variety of different ways. I don't know if that had something to do with the comfortability of Jordan Love and who he was throwing to, and just having the experience with guys like Dontayvion Wicks and Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs and Jaden Reed, et cetera. And he just didn't have that connection with Matthew Golden. It certainly felt like that connection was there in some clutch moments when it needed to be. And he came up with some huge plays, meaning Matthew Golden, but they need to find a way. And I believe wholeheartedly they will find a way to utilize him, not just more, but in better situations, in more effective situations, in more game-changing situations. The beautiful thing about Golden, and one of the reasons why he's a first-round pick or, you know, in a wide receiver, is because he's not a one-trick pony. Yes, he's fast, but he's not just a I'm going to run by you guy. He's a great route runner. He can catch over the middle. He has phenomenal hands. And as you saw in that Bears game, he can run after the catch as well. So figure it out. Find a way to get him more involved in the offense. That's probably the biggest thing I would say. If you told me next year, you know, he's at about 600 snaps, meaning it's only about 112 more, I wouldn't be super stunned by that. Maybe I probably wouldn't even be disappointed slash offended by that. Watson and Reed should legitimately probably be ahead of him. And then Wicks is still going to get snaps. Savion Williams is going to get snaps. There's probably another receiver, whoever it is, that gets some snaps. And so if it's around 600, it's only 112 more snaps. You know, game that out over 17, 18 games. It's not that many more per game, but it's not just the snaps. It's, again, getting him more involved and ingrained in the offense. And that's going to be the big step. It didn't ever really feel like Green Bay did that. In fact, Savion Williams, who only played 91 snaps, felt like when he got in, they were trying to get him the football. Yet Matthew Golden, their first round pick, it didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like, hey, we have to make a concerted effort to get him the football. And even when they did, it didn't feel like it was always the right way to do so. So he is number one A on my list of players that have to be utilized better in 2026. The good news is I can't imagine he won't be. Again, we got the sneak preview in the Bears game of exactly what he's capable of. And I expect that very much to carry over into 2026. And we're going to stay right at wide receiver for number two on the list. And that's Savion Williams. Savion should be at best wide receiver five going into next year. You're going to have, assuming, you know, I guess I shouldn't assume that they're healthy, but assuming health, he should be at best wide receiver five. Watson, Reed, Wicks, and Golden should all be ahead of him. But as mentioned, he only played 91 snaps, but it's not just that. What was Savion Williams' most impactful play? It was the play down the field against the Giants where he went up and got the ball, made a big time play, and really won them the game on that play. I don't think they win if it's not for that play. That's a huge, you know, fourth down completion. If they don't do that, I don't think they win. And so you go back and watch Savion Williams. And I think actually a lot of draft analysts made this mistake. You go and watch him in his final year in college and you see all the gadget stuff. He's lining up as a wildcat quarterback and, you know, reverses end arounds, and they're doing all this different stuff with him. And that's great. He was able to do it. But go back to his earlier days at TCU, and he was a legitimately dangerous down the field wide receiver. And it felt like even when Savion got in with those 91 snaps, it was, can we get him on a jet sweep or an end around or use him as a kick returner? I think he even got a couple wildcat quarterback plays, right? And that's great. You can still do some of that stuff. In fact, the wildcat quarterback stuff worked well, and I think you could probably even do a little bit more of that. But I want to see Savion Williams become that player that he was early in his college career and be a guy that can go up and get the ball and make big plays for you. He has that type of ability and that type of potential. So A, utilize him a little bit more, but B, really work to refine his craft as a true wide receiver, because I think that's where his ultimate value is down the road, not just a gadget guy. And I'll be totally frank too. The gadget stuff was fine, but as a kick returner, end around, reverse guy, you know, somebody that got a bubble screen, it didn't feel super dynamic. It was good. It was fine, But it wasn't like, oh my God, the ball is in his hands. Let's go. He's making everybody miss and look how fast he is. It was fine. And that's where I think, again, make him a true wide receiver. And then I think you'll see him take off, hit another level to his game, and really be able to impact this team in an entirely different way. We'll be right back. Hey friends, it's time to shoot your shot on Prize Picks and get $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's right. Prize Picks is now giving you $50 in lineups when you sign up and play your first $5 lineup. Now Prize Picks makes every dunk, every dime, and every board that much more exciting. So don't miss this chance to get started on America's number one app for sports picks. And yes, Prize Picks is available here in Wisconsin. I've been picking more or less every week and have never looked back. Make sure to check if Prize Picks is available in your area today, and it probably is. They're available in 50 states. Now, Prize Picks doesn't end with football season. This week, I'm going with some basketball and hockey. Tyrese Maxey, Connor McDavid, Cade Cunningham, all three are going to be in my lineups this week. I can't wait. And guess what? Baseball season is going to be here before you know it as well. So it's time to join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports picks app. And Prize Picks puts their users first, so all withdrawals are fast and secure. So download that Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Number three is the offensive line. And I'll specifically say here, Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, and Sean Ryan, if he's back. I understand the need for versatility and getting the best five guys out there and cross-training some players and things like that. But at some point in time, you also need to plan for what your best offensive line is and make sure that the players that you're putting out there can play that position at a high level. And for me, Jordan Morgan now needs to be entrenched at left tackle. I'm saying about 95-5 split in training camp, OTAs, mini camps, etc. Meaning 95% of the time he's at left tackle. And if you want to cross train him 5% of the time at left guard, right guard, wherever you want to put him, right tackle, so be it. But I want to see him about 95% of the time in practices moving forward at left tackle. Aaron Banks has been at left guard. That's fine. Sean Ryan, if he's back, he is going to be the center if he's back. I don't know if he's going to be or not, but they had him at right guard to start the season, which is fine. He played well there the year before, but now they're going to need him at center. 95-5. I want him 95% of the time at center, 5% cross-trained elsewhere. He's played a lot of guard. If you need to push him out there, I'm sure he can remember how to do it. It's like riding a bike, right? But he needs to focus solely on center if he's back. And then Anthony Belton, trained at tackle the majority of the offseason, barely, in fact, didn't get time at guard in OTAs, mini camps, or training camps. They solely focused him on left tackle, right tackle. Then during the season, cross-trained him at right guard, eventually put him in at right guard. And I said, you know, very disappointed in the end, where if they just would have had Morgan at tackle the entire time and Belton at guard the entire time, I think they would have been far better off. And some benefit of hindsight there, no question about it. But Belton now needs to be at right guard. Morgan needs to be at left tackle. If Ryan's back, he needs to be at center. Don't even touch Zach Tom at right tackle. Banks is at left guard. Those five guys need to train there next to each other, getting familiar with each other. If it's not Ryan, whoever the center is, then he needs to be there practicing there full time. You can cross train everyone on the back end. Travis Glover, put him at left tackle, left guard, right tackle, do what you need to do. Jacob Monk, put him at center, right guard, left guard, do what you need to do. John Williams, I don't care if he's at all five spots. If Donovan Jennings is back, I don't care if he's at all five spots. Cross train everyone else as much as your heart desires. But those five need to be in their right spots, practicing there, getting used to their neighbors next to them, knowing who's going to play, how they play next to them, how you get some of those double teams, a little bit more synergy there. They've cross trained. All of them pretty much know how to do it to some extent. Now they need to master their craft, get better, and get used to themselves on, you know, the line next to each other and become one singular unit, which is when they can be at their best. So I think they need to utilize all those players better, but make sure they're in the right spots. It seems like they're going to be, but that's going to be a really key point for this offensive line moving forward. Number four, this is another one. I don't know if this player is going to be back or not. I hope they are, but I don't know for sure. That's Chris Brooks. This may not be one that comes to mind right away. What is Chris Brooks's key skill slash trait? Pass protection, right? He's a fantastic blitz pickup and pass protection back in the backfield. He is a perfect third down back because he can pick up the blitz. He can pass pro for you, but he has enough juice where if you check it down to him or give it to him on a screen, he can still make some things happen. He's not, you know, a completely inept or slow or anything running back where if you get the ball in his hands, he can't do anything with it. He's a good back. He's not great. He's not dynamic, but he's good with the ball in his hands. So you can still use him in the backfield. He's still a true running back. And then he can do a phenomenal job at picking up the blitz. And then if you need to, or if there's no blitz to pick up, he can use, you know, go on a check down or go out in the flat. And he's great at catching the ball. And again, he can get some yards after the catch. He's perfect in that role. How many times last year do you think that Chris Brooks was used in blitz pickup slash pass protection per PFF at least? 35 times. Only 35 times. And it got less and less as the season went along. You started seeing him, you know, Emmanuel Wilson used there more. Josh Jacobs, who is not good in pass pro, was utilized there, I think probably just to get another weapon on the field. I get it. I like Josh Jacobs being on the field too. But Chris Brooks is very good in that role. 35 times, 17 games, that's like two times per game. And I'll be very, very clear here. I'm not saying that Chris Brooks needs to be your lone third down back through the entirety of the game, that he needs to be back there picking up the blitz, you know, 5-10 times per game or anything like that. I'm not saying you can't use Jacobs or another running back from time to time, but I'd like to see it a little bit more than that. And he's so good at it. And it just, again, gives you that opportunity for Love to buy a little bit more time and find somebody down the field. I'd like to see him utilized a little bit more in that role if he's back in 2026. Number five, Colby Wooden. Colby Wooden had one of the more interesting journeys of any Packer in 2025. Wooden came into the offseason, probably looked at the numbers and saw Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks. They draft Warren Brinson. Nasir Stackhouse is sort of a priority undrafted free agent. And you're probably looking at everything and saying, yeah, there's no guarantee. And they easily could just keep five defensive tackles. There's no guarantee I'm on this team. And so he decides, and maybe with some help from the Packers too, but he decides, hey, I'm going to put on a pretty significant amount of weight and become a more run-stopping defensive tackle because Kenny's getting old. You've got Warren Brinson on the slider side. You've got, you know, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks, both more of your pass rushing defensive tackles. So he probably saw an opportunity there to say, hey, if I can be more of a run stuffer and add to that, it gives me a real opportunity. Well, then all of a sudden, he, you know, Kenny Clark gets traded. And you've got Wyatt and Wooden as now your he earns the starting spot, not getting cut. He earns the starting spot next to Devontae Wyatt in large part because he put on that weight and became the more run-stuffing defensive tackle. And I was so impressed with how he started the season and, you know, what he was capable of in that role. He got into the backfield. He played screens well. He held up pretty darn well against the run. I'm like, this is really impressive what Colby Wooden has done. And then, you know, by the time about Devontae Wyatt goes down, Colby Wooden is starting to wear down. In his first year, in his rookie year, he played 298 snaps. In his second year, he played 260. That's sort of what he was used to. And now he put on weight and you threw him out there 622 times because you basically had to. And you could just tell by the time the end of the year came around, he was completely worn out. He is now taking on double teams more than he ever has. He put on weight in the offseason. He's going from 200 snaps to 622 snaps. And he just, you know, you could tell he didn't have the legs underneath him by the end of the year. And it's hard to blame him. But what he looked like early in the year when he was sort of utilized correctly, I was so impressed. But that was too much, Colby Wooden. And that's not any fault of Colby's. I honestly don't think so. He's probably not meant to be that true starting defensive tackle. But if he can be your third defensive tackle, right behind Devontae Wyatt and another starter, and you can play him 400 snaps, 450, maybe even 500, I think you are in a very good spot. So it's no fault of Colby Wooden's. It's no fault of the Packers. They basically had to use him that much. But I think if you can just take back his usage a little bit, And even then, I think he's going to be better in year two at that size and now having played 622 snaps this past year. But if you could get that to 450, I would feel really, really good about where Wooden's at. And if you can take him from what by the end of the year was him being your number one defensive tackle and move him to your third, that would be much better as well. And that would be a much better way to utilize Colby Wooden. Number six, another player I don't know if they're going to be on the team or not. That's Nate Hobbs. I don't even need to go into this one that much. They brought him in as a hybrid outside corner, inside corner. Another one of these where they liked the versatility. They wanted to be able to use him a little bit of everywhere. And it was good in theory, and it was terrible in practice. And it's even worse because you paid him as a top-tier slot guy, and there's no slot job available because Javon Bullard's in that spot and was playing it really damn well. And so now you've got this highly priced slot corner who doesn't have a spot in the slot and isn't capable of really playing at a high enough level on the outside, and certainly not a high enough level to justify the price that you paid him as a top-tier slot corner. And so how do you figure this out? Well, I actually thought that there was a moment, and if you remember, I talked about this all offseason, last offseason, and early in the year once they got Nate Hobbs. I said, what I would love to see is, I would have loved, better corners on the outside, but Carrington Valentine and Keyshawn Nixon on the outside with Javon Bullard in the slot on early downs as sort of your run-stopping overall nickel player. And then when you're in obvious passing downs, get Javon off the field because that's not what he's good at, and get Nate Hobbs out there so you have a better cover player in the slot. Or even Nixon and Hobbs on the outside on early downs, and then Hobbs kicks inside and you bring Valentine in. I think that's actually probably what I called for a little bit more. And for a little bit, before Hobbs got hurt at the end where he was finally out for the year, there were a couple games in there where that's how they used Hobbs. Not on the outside, but it was Bullard slot position, but then in obvious passing downs, Hobbs would come in and play those snaps instead of Javon Bullard. There's still a way where I think you can make that work. Can he earn the contract that way? Probably not, which is why they probably have to look at whether or not they want to keep him on the roster. But the one other unique thing is that Jonathan Gannon did play a pretty significant, at least in terms of comparison to the rest of the league, amount of dime snaps. And if they're going to do that, they do have the ability. Now, part of it was because they kind of used a safety as a linebacker, but maybe Bullard can do that. And maybe you can put Bullard next to Edgerrin Cooper, and then you can put Hobbs in the slot, and then your two outside corners, and then Williams and McKinney on the back end. Or if you just want to play a true dime, you can put Bullard and Hobbs in the slot together, your two outside corners, Williams and McKinney at safety, one linebacker, probably Edgerrin Cooper, and then your four-man defensive front. And you can win, hopefully in dime that way. So I do think there might be some better ways to utilize Nate Hobbs in this defense than where he was utilized this past year in Jeff Hafley's defense. But Green Bay is going to have to decide, A, is that role worth it for them at the price that they're about to pay him? But if it is, if they do feel like it is, they want to keep him on the roster, then they've got to find a way to utilize him in that type of role rather than outside corner or just basically putting him on the bench behind Javon Bullard. That doesn't do anybody any good either. At least you're not getting the value of the contract, the ROI that you put into investing into Nate Hobbs. We'll be right back. Next is Carrington Valentine. Carrington Valentine, to me, has worked himself out of a full-time starting cornerback job. He just isn't a good enough tackler, and he's not going to be a good enough tackler, and I don't need to see him on early downs or on situations where the other team can run the ball, or even in situations where they can run those wide receiver screens to the outside. I don't think it's something for Valentine where it's not like it's a desire thing. I think he wants to be able to be better at it, but he's just small and there's only so much he can do. And maybe some of it's a little bit a desire thing too, but he's just not good enough at it. And so I still think there's a role and a spot for Carrington Valentine on obvious passing downs, but they've got to make it so that he is not a full-time corner. And I think you're doing a disservice to him and your team if he's in there on early downs. You might get there if there's injuries and things like that. It is what it is. But if you could utilize him more as a true, obvious pass down corner, same thing with Nate Hobbs in the slot, those two start having a lot more value. Bullard in the slot on early downs. Nixon's probably going to start almost no matter what. And now you just need one better corner on early downs on the outside. And I feel like you can get a lot closer at corner. That's what they're going to have to figure out. Number eight, we don't need to go over in much detail. It's just Evan Williams. And it's not anything specific. They used him the right way. But early in the season, he was not a full-time player. They were platooning him at safety with Javon Bullard still. And then even later in the season, when there were games where they were going more base defense, meaning true 4-3 last year, and there was only four defensive backs on the field, they would use the two corners. Xavier would play full-time. And then Bullard and Williams would still rotate at times at that second safety spot. And listen, I love Javon Bullard. Evan Williams cannot come off the field. He's too good. In my opinion, he was their second best defender behind only Micah Parsons. He cannot come off the field. He's too good. I love Bull, but he should be in the slot. Or if there's a safety hurt, then he can come in. But full-time safety next to Xavier McKinney needs to be Evan Williams. Number nine is Xavier McKinney and Edgerrin Cooper. You might be like, well, that's two different positions. That doesn't make sense. Edgerrin Cooper and Xavier McKinney both played really good football a year ago. And I know maybe the flashy numbers weren't there and the big time impact plays weren't there, but they were both really, really good. But I didn't feel like they were put in enough positions to go be playmakers. And I know what they were thinking. I wholeheartedly know what they were thinking. Xavier McKinney is so good at that deep safety position. And Evan Williams is so good at running up and playing in the box. Those are both sort of their superpowers. So X is going to play deep safety. Evan's going to crash into the box. And they're both amazing at it. Amazing at it. But by playing X in that deep safety role, you know teams don't throw, which is great. You're eliminating some of those deep shots down the field. There's so much value in that. But you're taking away one of your biggest playmakers from having opportunities to make plays. He still is extremely valuable what he's doing. But one of your bigger playmakers is now sort of taken out of the game to some real extent. And that I think they need to figure out a little bit more to be able to just put him in a few more positions to make plays. And to be fair, when they did, he did drop a couple picks last year, but I still think he's one of your 1A playmakers on defense, and you have to put him in a position to do so. Same thing with Edgerrin Cooper. I know exactly what they were thinking. They're playing a bend but don't break style of defense, and Edgerrin Cooper on the second level was basically a vacuum. Anything that got completed underneath or, you know, even to the short sides, he's just a vacuum sucking everything up and making sure that those players are down exactly where they were. And he's so fast and he's such a good tackler that he was basically the cleaner on that second level. And, you know, again, he's just so great at it that it's tough to, you know, want to blitz him or, you know, do some more creative things with him because he's so great at doing that thing, especially in a bend but don't break defense. But at the end of the day, Coop and X are two phenomenal playmakers, and you have to give them the free rein from time to time. I'm not saying all the time, but from time to time to go make plays because they're just too impactful to not do that. And last but not least, number 10 is Jordan Love. Jordan Love was, for too much of the season, at least it felt like, the secondary option behind Josh Jacobs in running the football. And it didn't feel like they got to the point until the end of the year where it was Jordan's offense and he could go and operate and sling the ball around more. He played in 15 games. He had 439 pass attempts, which is 29.3 per game. It's not a super low number, but even if he played a 17-game season and you average that out, you know, to 29.3 per game in a 17-game season, that would have put him 12th in the league. And it would have put him behind quarterbacks like Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Baker Mayfield, Cam Ward, Aaron Rodgers. He can't be throwing less than those quarterbacks. And part of the reason sometimes is winning and losing. If you're behind, you have to throw more. I get some things like that. But Jordan should be the focal point of the team. This is Jordan's team. He's the offense and he needs to be the guy. And this offense and this team looked best when you gave him more free rein and made him the focal point of the offense. Like I said, at the end of the year, it felt like they got there a little bit more, but it felt like they got there late. And 2026 needs to be the year that they now fully hand over those reins to Jordan Love and say, bring us to the promised land. Because I think he's capable of it. He had a phenomenal year last year. I think if you would give him more opportunity, he'd perform even better. I don't think you need to have any sort of handcuffs on him to try to reel him back in. He took great care of the football, and he made big explosive plays, and he was efficient, and he was top five in just about anything you want to look at. It's his offense now. It's his team now, and Matt needs to hand that over to him and utilize him like the star quarterback that he is. Those are my... I have 10 listed. Some of them have extra players in it, but Matthew Golden, Savion Williams, the offensive line, Chris Brooks, Colby Wooden, Nate Hobbs, Carrington Valentine, Evan Williams, Edgerrin Cooper, and then Jordan Love. Those are the players that need to be utilized better in 2026. And if they are, I think they're going to put Green Bay in a much better opportunity to succeed and win at a higher level in 2026. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Shout out to all our wonderful All-Pro and Hall of Fame members. Go sign up. PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelsinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch, Zillertson, and Large Charles. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.